Okay, back to the mitzvah bikur cholim, the mitzvah visiting the sick. Now, there's a few interesting questions that I asked about that. For instance, there's a whole tshuva of Moshe Feinstein. I don't remember all the details, but the question was, there was a certain very contagious disease that somebody had, that any object brought into that room had to be burnt, because it would be contagious. So the question is, can you bring tefillin into that room for the guy to put on tefillin, even though you're going to have to burn the tefillin afterwards? And so the whole discussion, I don't remember what the outcome of it was, but remember, it's the children of Meshi has a whole issue. If you're allowed to bring it in, you're not allowed to bring it in. Also, is a person obligated to visit somebody who has a contagious disease that you might catch it from it? So the Poskim talk, it's interesting if it's a doubtful sakana, not such a doubtful sakana, if it's a minimal sakana for yourself, then you should visit the guy. Whatever, I mean, there's a lot of interesting dinim about visiting patients. If you might get sick from the person, are you obligated to endanger yourself to help somebody else? Anyway, coming back to where we left off. The main mitzvah bikur cholim is to make sure the person has their needs. And he should be calm and, you know, cool, calm, and collected, like they say. He should be able to feel better, because if a person is upset, that doesn't help necessarily the healing process. There's another interesting din, and this is a pretty common case, by the way. If somebody has a relative that's very sick, and they have another relative who's also sick, and if you tell them that that person died, let's say, or is very, very sick, that can affect them. It could affect their health. Are you obligated to tell them? I'll give you a practical example. Somebody passes away. The question is, they have relatives that, if they hear about it, it's going to really cause them to get worse. Should you tell them? Should you not tell them? What's the best thing to do? And the truth is, every case has to be decided individually, because there's so many, 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 many details. You know, for instance, if somebody is, let's say, mentally out of it, they have dementia, a little Alzheimer's, you know, things like that, then you're going to tell the person that the husband died, the parent died, whatever, you know. So the question is that going to be beneficial to the patient or detrimental to the patient? Sometimes you can try to prolong telling the person that somebody, a relative, passed away, because if you don't tell them for 30 days, if they don't know for 30 days that the person passed away, then it becomes what's called a shmor d'chayka, a distant finding out, and then there's only like an hour shiva. Let's say a person has a relative that passed away, and they find out on the 29th day that the person passed away. They have to sit shiva for 7 days. But if it's after 30 days, then the din is they only have to sit shiva for an hour. So a lot of times, you know, if you can avoid it, like people are in different countries and there's not the communication anyway, you know, whatever. So a lot of times they just try to conceal it from the person. Number one, you know, they're too ill to sit shiva and all that. So like, what are you gaining by telling them? So sometimes, every case has to be decided individually, but sometimes Allah would say, don't tell them. Let him find out after 30 days. He might not never find out either, because who knows, you know, if they're not well, they might not ever find out. But at least let him find out, then they don't have to sit shiva for the whole thing. It's an hour shiva, and that's it. Finished. The Rebbe had a situation when his brother passed away in Tavshin, I don't know, Yud Beis, that the Rebbe didn't want his mother to know. And the Rebbe did everything possible that his mother shouldn't find out, that her son, in other words, the Rebbe's brother passed away. In fact, in those years, the Rebbe used to go visit his mother every day. The Rebbe used to go at a certain time every day, Walked out to 770. She lived on 1414 President Street, President in Kingston, which is now the Yeshiva dorm, over there in the kitchen. And the Rebbe's mother used to live there. And the Rebbe used to visit her every day. So even when the Rebbe was sitting Shiva for his brother, because he didn't want his mother to know, the Rebbe would visit her anyway every day. And he would make sure that he'd be wearing a coat or whatever to cover the torn garment. And he was wearing like sneakers, but he painted them black that his mother shouldn't notice. They say she knew anyway, but they were both playing the game. The Rebbe didn't want his mother to know. The mother didn't want the Rebbe to know that she knew. You know, they're like both playing the game. And in fact, the Rebbe knew his brother's writing. And the brother lived in Liverpool, in England. So the Rebbe would write letters, because they didn't call, nobody called people in those days overseas, right? It was crazy expensive. So the brother used to write letters to his mother in New York. So the Rebbe knew his brother's writing. The Rebbe would write letters in New York, send them to England, that they should send it from England to the mother. So that's the way they played for a few years. It was like that. The Rebbe would write letters, send them to England. England should post, because otherwise she'll see the postmark where it's coming from. They should send it from England to the mother. And that's, they say she knew anyway. But
did she ever find out?
I don't know. They say she knew. I don't know.
But you said your days, right? So
I never saw the Rebbe's mother, because when I came to New York, she passed away the 6th of Tishrei, Tavshin Chaf Hei. I came to New York.
What year is that?
Tavshin Chaf Hei, 64, because it was not January yet. The year 64. No, October 74. I mean, 64. I came to New York. We left Wednesday. Rosh Hashanah was Monday and Tuesday. We left by bus on Tuesday. We came to New York Wednesday. And, I got there Thursday, Dalid, Tishrei, and 2 days later, the Rebbetzin passed away, and the next day was the Levaya. It was the first funeral I was ever at as a kid. But I never, the Rebbetzin Chaim Moshe, I saw many times, but her I didn't see. There's a lot of pictures of her, anyway. So again, sometimes people try not to tell a sick person that somebody is a relative is very sick or passed away, because like, what for? Well, what's the purpose of them knowing about it if there's no benefit to it? Okay, now, when you daven for somebody in the presence of the sick person, you could do it in any language. Why can you do it in any language? Because like we learned yesterday, the Shekhinah is on the head of the, next to the head of the sick person. And the Shekhinah knows all languages. But if you're not davening in front of the present, in the presence of the sick person, you should not daven in Aramaic. You should not pray in Aramaic. Why don't you pray in Aramaic? So Bechlal, the Gemara says, in Shabbos and other places, that the angels don't understand Aramaic, for whatever reason. The angels don't understand, except Gabriel, Taisa says. Gabriel spoke, understood the Aramaic. But the angels don't understand Aramaic. And if you're going to need the help of angels to take your prayers up to Hashem, because we don't have the ability ourselves, so the angels are not going to be able to help you.
So, Aramaic?
Yeah, but that's not for the angels. I mean, that's not... No, there's a minion, but besides that, you're davening to Hashem. It's not, you don't need the angels to take up the prayers. Normally, when you daven, you need the angel, the malachim, to take up the prayers. Kaddish is in memory of the dead. It's not the prayer that you're taking up.
Do angels understand other languages?
What?
Angels
understand all languages except Aramaic. Maybe Farsi not. Maybe, I don't know. The last time I spoke to my angel, he didn't know. Brich Shmei?
Yeah, why not?
That's a piece of Zoya, by the way. And again, it's not a prayer that you need the angels to work with.
When you say prayer, you mean literally Shmonesra.
Huh?
When you say that the angels take up your prayer, that means Shmonesra.
Generally, when you request, when you have requests. But the Moshul, when a person makes a Mishaberich for somebody. So number one, you have, you notice the expression of the Mishaberach is B'toich Shar Chayla Yisrael, together with all the other sick people. Why? So it says in Halacha, because when you include other people in it also, so then, you know, it's a communal thing. So then you're answered much easier than when it's an individual. So when it comes to during the week, and therefore if you notice, there's a very big difference in the text of a Mishaberach that you make for sick people on Shabbos than you do during the weekday. For instance, when you make a Mishaberach for a sick person during the week, number one, you say Mishaberach of Simon Yaakov, who you rape. He should heal. Okay? Who you rape as, and then you say, the Yishtach Meheira, the four Shlema, you send them, you know, all that. Shabbos, you don't say that. Number one, in the text of the Mishaberach, you say, who you varech. You don't say who you rape. You should bless. Because you're not allowed to ask for personal needs on Shabbos. And that's why you just say Shabbos imelizuk or for krevolovai, the Shabbos, it should be Shabbos screaming and the healing should come close. You don't say yishlach lai, send them meheira for shemun ashmayim, achivam. Shabbos, you cut out a lot of things because Shabbos, you're not allowed to daven certain personal needs. And that's why we don't daven the whole Shemun Esrei during the week, like we do during the week. So, but Shabbos, you say Shabbos imelizik, what? Many men or men and women together?
Not one man, plural.
Why not? Ramachiv or Em Shesagidehem.
Because it's more than one person.
Ramach Evarehem Shesagidehem. That's the way you speak Hebrew, my friend.
Okay. If somebody does for men and women together, then
you say B'choy Ramachidehem. Yeah, because it's a different text. If you're Ramach Evarehem and Shesagidehem. Okay, okay. Next is when you visit somebody, Shulchan Aruch says you should speak a little bit with brains. Don't say stupid. Don't say stupid things to a sick person because you'll make them sicker. Friends, I'll get you another halacha. It's getting late, but there's another interesting halacha. Somebody's, to give me an example, somebody's father is sick and he's dangerously ill. And the doctor says it's not a good idea to tell him how serious the condition is because then he'll give up. And the father says to the kid, I want you to tell me exactly what the story is. I want you to tell me what, you know. So he's not obligated to tell the father. I, even though the father's, I'm commanding you, keep it avaim, honoring the father, because it's detrimental for the father to know about it, and therefore you're allowed to not say it. I understand, so you don't have to tell him you're dying in a week, in a day. You can tell him, you know, maybe you should get your things in order. That's what it says in Halacha anyway. Maybe you should get your things in order. You know, you tell the story, a wife went with her husband to the doctor. And the husband was the one that was sick. And the doctor says to the wife afterwards, listen, your husband's very sick. The only thing that will cure him is if you give him unconditional love and whatever he wants you do, and whatever he wants to eat, you, bottom line is, just whatever he wants, spoil him. So later, the husband says to the wife, what did he die? And if not, the doctor says he's going to die. So the husband says to the wife, what did he tell you? She said, he told me you're going to die.